Richard McGregor, a former Financial Times Beijing bureau chief, has just written a behind-the-headlines guide to the history and current state of our country's relations with the two most powerful nations in East Asia, Japan and China. In his new book, Asia's Reckoning, China, Japan, and the Fate of U.S. Power in the Pacific Century, McGregor unpacks the old toxic rivalries between U.S., Japan, and China and looks to the future as it changes and redefines the world order in the 21st century. Richard McGregor is a journalist and an author with extensive experience in reporting from East Asia and Washington. Again, the title of the new book is Asia's Reckoning, China, Japan, and the Fate of U.S. Power in the Pacific Century. Richard McGregor, thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me on.
So when it comes to where we are right now, and we look at this, the question that you tried to answer in the book of that the fate of U.S. power in the Pacific century, has any of this changed dramatically just since the change in administration?
Well, I think it's U.S. power is both changing dramatically and gradually, and has been for some time before our eyes. The big change is China's rise, and I don't think Mr. Trump has helped that at all. He was pretty open in the election campaign that he instinctively didn't really see why the U.S. was still out there in Japan and South Korea. He said they could fend for themselves. He's changed in office a little bit, I think, but I think people are pretty worried about him.
So, obviously, your book handles a lot more than just that, but we are dealing with this with the rhetoric that is coming out of Washington, and some of the strange relationships that have developed as a result. For you, in writing this story, what did you use as your starting point?
Yeah, I mean, this will sound funny, but I lived it for a long time in both Japan and China before moving to the U.S., and I was always interested in the relationship between these two countries and, frankly, why they didn't get on, why there was such an enmity beyond just the sort of cliched reasons that Japan was bad in the war and the Chinese are angry that they never said sorry. And it's much, much more complicated than that. But I also think Americans perhaps don't appreciate what they did in East Asia, in some ways what they've achieved, because the U.S. has been the dominant power in East Asia since the war. And it's basically underwritten, I would say, the biggest economic miracle since the Industrial Revolution. You have Japan, then South Korea, then China, then Southeast Asian nations, Taiwan as well. And the reason that they were able to put aside all their differences in many respects was because the U.S. provided the security. If you think about it, China, the Korean Civil War, as we see every day now, has never been solved. China, Taiwan, the Chinese Civil War has never been solved. Japan and China don't get on still. But all these sort of frozen in the 50s conflicts, which the U.S. had kept at bay, are all coming back. And I think that's mainly because of China. China was very happy to have the U.S. keeping the peace there so they could get on with growing their economy. Now that they're big and powerful themselves, they think, well, we'd like to be the dominant power in Asia. And that's where we're at today.
So with that, and you write about this in the book, but the Japanese invasion of China of the 30s and the 40s, let's look at that. How does that play into this modern struggle for ascendancy in East Asia?
I think anybody living in America in recent months with what happened in Charlottesville can well appreciate that history just doesn't sort of wash itself out of politics overnight. And that's what we're seeing with Japan and China. They've never managed to settle the legacy of the war. Japan's never been able to do what Germany did post-war in really expressing genuine remorse and paying reparations. On the other side of the ledger, China, I think, has never really wanted to settle the war issue because it gives them leverage in their relationship with China. So we've had this sort of slow-motion history wars playing out in the regions now for decades, And they just don't go away. And that's very corrosive to getting a sort of stable political settlement.
What is, do we know what stability is? I mean, I'm sorry for the cynical question, but I mean, do we even really know what stability is anymore?
Well, it's kind of an interesting question, actually, because we kind of have had stability in East Asia. There was the Vietnam War. We haven't had a major conflict, though, for some time. But I guess you might rephrase the question and say, what might stability look like in the future?
Okay, you use that question and answer that one.
Yeah, well, the U.S., for all its faults and manifest faults and all the arrogance that comes with being a superpower, has been a very trusted power in Asia. Now, can China just take America's place as it wants to? People don't trust China. And that's the sort of dilemma the U.S. has. There's been a lot of talk. I don't know whether you've been hearing the talk lately about the so-called Thucydides trap, you know, what happens when, you know, a rising superpower inevitably is going to fight against the established superpower, that is, you know, U.S. versus China. You can look at this another way. You know, the U.S. has a virtual empire in East Asia. It's pretty dangerous to gain an empire, but it's even more dangerous to give it away. So if the U.S. was to exit Asia, then I think we wouldn't have stability there. And you think about it, that's the entire global economy goes through Japan, China, Taiwan, South Korea. It's absolutely essential to global stability. And that's what I see unwinding out there.
What effect, and I mean deep effect over time, will the situation in North Korea have on how we handle this right now? Have on those relationships going forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's very hard to answer. There's a short-term and long-term issue there. I guess the short-term is whether there is some miscalculation in North Korea or maybe in Washington, which triggers some sort of military conflict, and that's a disaster. You know, I was just in Seoul in South Korea, crowded city of 10 million people, only 40 kilometers from the North Korean border, which is bristling with armaments, conventional weaponry, let alone nukes. So, you know, we're worried right now whether Kim Jong-un can target America. He can already target Japan. So short-term military conflict. I don't think there's one about to be one, but it's very dangerous. Longer term, what do we do about a problem like North Korea? You know, this sort of family political franchise, a despotic franchise. Kim is the third in line. They're a very paranoid bunch of people, as they ought to be, and the nuclear weapons are their sort of security blanket. They're not going to give them up. How do we negotiate something like that? Do we accept them as a nuclear power? What do we give them in return? It's a very, very complex situation.
The book is fascinating and is, I think, good for any time, but especially what we're going through now. It's Asia's Reckoning, China, Japan, and the Fate of U.S. Power in the Pacific Century. It is published by Viking Books. Richard McGregor, a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, Asia's Reckoning is the name of the book. Richard McGregor is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.